Whether you're starting or scaling your company's security program, demonstrating top-notch security practices and establishing trust is more important than ever. Vanta automates compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more, saving you time and money while helping you build customer trust. Plus, you can streamline security reviews by automating questionnaires and demonstrating your security posture with a customer-facing trust center, all powered by Vanta AI. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vanta to manage risk and prove security in real time. Get $1,000 off Vanta when you go to vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off.
Tonight was the final pay-per-view of 2024 for AEW or any wrestling company, World's End. 1 year ago, at World's End, we got the devil reveal. Remember that whole story? We got Adam Cole revealed as the devil. Samoa Joe was crowned the new AEW World Heavyweight Champion. Eddie Kingston won the first ever Continental Classic. And basically unified. How many belts did he have? Three belts? Whatever it was. Anyway, he stood victorious at the end of the tournament last year. And Adam Copeland went down as the shortest reigning TNT champion in the history of AEW. Speaking of Adam Copeland, he played into the finish of the show tonight because we had the return of Adam Copeland. First time we've seen him in the ring since he broke his leg in the cage match with Malakai Black at Double or Nothing, doing one of the dumber things that we've seen somebody do this year. And he is back with FTR. They showed up at the end of the show tonight to take out the Death Riders, clean house, and lay claim to everything. According to Copeland, we're taking it all, he said. And he is making Jon Moxley his new target. And so finally, I'm so excited to see that of all people who are going to finally stand up to Jon Moxley, it is a former WWE talent who has not been saved for the majority of the year, it feels like. He is going to come and save the day for All Elite Wrestling. That's great. That's great. Well, you know what, though? It does solve one problem, which is that we have not had enough big names standing up to Jon Moxley and the Death Riders in this storyline so far. And so you can't say that Adam Copeland is not a big name. And Tony Khan is getting back some of his big guns. He's getting them healthy again at exactly the time that he wants them, because they're starting their simulcasts on Max starting this Wednesday. We're heading into a brand new year, and so he's got Adam Copeland back, and he's got another big name back as well that I'm going to be talking about in the form of one Kenny Omega, who is wrestling his first match next weekend at the Tokyo Dome. Although Tony Schiavone, apparently, if you were to listen to him tonight, he has no concept of this whatsoever. Because the way he was talking on commentary, boy, it's going to be a while before Kenny gets himself in ring shape and we see him back in the ring. Really? Really? It's just hilarious to me because not only is he wrestling next weekend, it's not like AEW has ignored it. They literally aired a video package for Kenny Omega and mentioned the fact that he is going to be working the Tokyo Dome next weekend. But apparently Tony Schiavone pays attention to what he wants. The Continental Classic. I mentioned that a moment ago, and I mentioned the fact that last year it was Eddie Kingston who got the win. The finalists this year were Okada, Ospreay, Fletcher, and Ricochet. And without the Continental Classic matches, this show would have been far worse than it was. Those matches are what carried this pay-per-view. And you had the finals of the Continental Classic, which I would say Okada and Ospreay probably gets the nod from me. For match of the night, but it's either that or Ospreay's match with Fletcher. Either way, the common denominator here is Will Ospreay, who continues to just go out there and absolutely kill it every single time he is in the ring, regardless of who he's in the ring with. This is the story of his career now for the past few years. We got some great action. The fans were super into the tournament matches, most of them tonight. And at the end of the finals, which saw Kazuchika Okada retain his Continental Championship, He won his first tournament, but he is still the Continental Champion. We got the return of Kenny Omega. Once again, back as an EVP in AEW, he came down to the ring and we had a face-to-face confrontation as he presented Okada with the Continental title. And we had a not-so-subtle visual behind them of the banner for All In Texas, which is coming up on July 12th, their big stadium show next summer. It seems very clear at this point what Tony Khan is waiting for in order to do that match, as he should, because that really is the show that makes the most sense. It was good to see Kenny back. I figured he was going to be there. I mean, I talked about this on Wednesday during my Dynamite review. I said, this is what we're going to get here on this show. We're going to get a face-to-face with Okada and Omega, and that's exactly what we got. Kenny is making his return in Japan. Tony wanted to get Omega on his show, even though Dynasty is partially an AEW show, but he wanted to get Kenny some FaceTime on his own program before he flies over to Japan. And he came out there, he was in his suit, right? He looked good, he looked rested. Hopefully he'll look good in the ring. We'll find out when he wrestles Gabe Kidd. We still don't know what Kenny is going to look like in ring yet. He hasn't had a match. But it's great to see him back and getting back into the swing of things. And provided he looks good next weekend, Tony needs to get him back on TV as soon as possible. But the build for Okada and Omega began in earnest tonight here on this pay-per-view. Continental Classic, I thought, was the highlight of the show. All the matches that we saw tonight. I'm going to talk about Ricochet as well. There's been a lot of talk about Ricochet, and we're going to get into Ricochet. The other thing that happened tonight also, I hope, God, I hope, is that we saw the end. Finito. Done. Finally. Finished. With MJF and Adam Cole. It started more than a year ago with the whole Brochacho stuff, and we had the MJF and Adam Cole bromance, and it led into what we saw at World's End a year ago. And then everything was shot to hell. Because not only was Adam Cole hurt, MJF got hurt. He had to go away. He had to heal up. And it completely screwed the entire thing up. All their plans, all of Tony Khan's plans, up in smoke. And ever since they both came back, they have not been able to get the train back on the tracks. This is not clicking. This is not working. It's not firing in the way that it was a year ago. And I think it's, frankly, actively been dragging down MJF. More than anything else, which is the last thing that you want to do. Tony Khan tonight, it felt like he was trying to put a bow on this and move on. I don't know if he's going to move on. I don't know that we're done for sure with these two, but we should be. This should be the end of MJF and Adam Cole, and they should both move on to something else. That's really what I liked the most about this. It wasn't even the match. It was the fact that it felt like we finally put a period on this, and we can move on. Kind of the way I've been feeling for a while now about Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan, right? We're going to hopefully put a period on that too on January 6th. That's how I felt about MJF and Adam Cole tonight. Hopefully that was the end. As far as surprises on the show, you got them in Copeland and Omega. Those were the two big surprises. Honestly, the biggest surprise, even bigger than those two, was that the pay-per-view ended at 11:30. No complaints out of me. I could sit here and tell you I was surprised the main event went less time than the finals of the Continental Classic did, but I'm not complaining. It's rare that you get an AEW pay-per-view that goes off the air that early. Hopefully that's the beginning of a trend. But to me, that was the biggest surprise of the entire night. This was better than last year's World's End. World's End last year was not a great show. It was one of the weaker AEW shows of the year. What I will tell you is that that four-way main event that we got tonight for the AEW World Championship, that was, if not the weakest, one of the weakest and worst main events that we have gotten all year on any AEW pay-per-view. And part of that is the fact that they usually deliver on their pay-per-views. We've gotten some fucking great main events this year out of this company on these shows. This will not go down as one of them. I sat here watching this match and I just found myself completely disinterested, completely disconnected from everything that was going on. And I hate it because Hangman Page has been one of my favorite parts of the show for the majority of this year. In the way that I can look at WWE and say, oh, Drew McIntyre, he's been one of the highlights of the entire year. Bronson Reed. He was the highlight of Monday Night Raw for a good chunk of the year, right? You could pick certain people out who really stood out and helped carry the show. Hangman Page and this whole metamorphosis in his character and this whole unhinged persona that he's been doing, I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it. And when he had that cage match with Swerve Strickland at All Out and he beat him and he won, you know, needle in the mouth at all, I thought, this is the perfect time to put the championship on him. You can get away from Hangman and Swerve for a while, and then you can build to eventually bringing it back at some point next year. You can run it back, and if you're going to put the belt back on Swerve, why not have him beat Hangman to do it, right? That's one of the longer stories they've been telling in this company. But Hangman, he was poised, he was ready, he was right there. Felt like he was on the precipice of, you know, being back in the title picture and getting the belt back on him. And I watched what they did tonight. You know, he was in the main event. He was challenging for the championship. But the show ends, and I'm just left here wondering, using him as an example, what's next for him, right? Where does he go from here? Is he just going to be shunned now to the side, or is he still going to be part of the title picture? Swerve's moved on. Swerve's going to be working with Ricochet. What's Hangman going to be doing? Where do we go from here now that Copeland is back? I mean, great for Copeland. He's in a cushy spot now, but what about some of these other guys? I'm not concerned about Orange Cassidy, but Jay White, Hangman Page, I'm curious now to see where they go with those guys. But this whole Moxley and Death Rider stuff, I had no expectation that he was going to lose the championship tonight, so I'm not going to tell you, oh, I'm disappointed in the outcome because I thought we were going to have a new champion. No, at no point did I think that. But you got the usual Death Rider's interference and the nonsense and the overbooked bullshit there at the end of the match. You know, and it's everything that was wrong with the NWO stuff when they got to the point where they jumped the shark. And everything that was wrong with all the overbooked TNA main events that they had with Jeff Jarrett on pay-per-view back in the day. Like, you can point to these different eras in different companies and say, God, man, I think back to those days and all this nonsense, and I'm so glad we don't have that anymore. That's what we have now with the Death Riders. But at least if this thing was clicking, if it was interesting, if I can almost excuse it, but in this case, it just sucks. Now, is Copeland and FTR being involved going to change that? I don't know. Probably not, but I don't know. Clearly, they're still building to Moxley and Darby at some point. I thought Revolution would be the time to do it, but now that Copeland is back, I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure they're not building to Moxley and Copeland at Revolution at the beginning of March. So I'm not sure as far as the timing on all that. And I can't tell you it's a match that really excites me, but they had to start involving some bigger names in this.
Whether you're starting or scaling your company's security program, demonstrating top-notch security practices and establishing trust is more important than ever. Vanta automates compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more, saving you time and money while helping you build customer trust. Plus, you can streamline security reviews by automating questionnaires and demonstrating your security posture with a customer-facing trust center, all powered by Vanta AI. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vanta to manage risk and prove security in real time. Get $1,000 off Vanta when you go to vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Whether you're starting or scaling your company's security program, demonstrating top-notch security practices and establishing trust is more important than ever. Vanta automates compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more, saving you time and money while helping you build customer trust. Plus, you can streamline security reviews by automating questionnaires and demonstrating your security posture with a customer-facing trust center, all powered by Vanta AI. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vanta to manage risk and prove security in real time. Get $1,000 off Vanta when you go to vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off.
Copeland is a big name. So to that end, it makes sense for him to want to go after Jon Moxley, for him to want to fly the flag of AEW. But to me, it just rings a little hollow when you have all these other guys, these younger guys, like a Darby. And again, I think they will get there with him. They're holding off on him. But, you know, for Copeland to be the one who comes in now, he's going to try to be the savior of AEW. All right. I mean, that's the story they're trying to tell. I was not a fan of that main event tonight. I actually think that they would have been better off closing the show with the finals of the Continental Classic and the return of Kenny Omega and the tease of an eventual match with him and Okada. That would have been a far better way to go off the air. But they wanted to end with the title. They wanted Copeland and the big surprise. Honestly, I was more excited to see Kenny back than I was Copeland. I would have closed the show with that. On the whole, I think there was a mix of good and not so good. More good than bad. More good than bad on this show. I think overall, it was a good show, but it was largely carried by the Continental Classic stuff. And there was also a TBS title match that was very good with Mercedes Moné and Chris Statlander. So we're going to get into the whole card here up and down. And there was an international title match also that turned into a pretty good match. We'll talk about all of it. This is your AEW World's End Review 2024, the final pay-per-view of the year. Let's get into this here. As you know, with these AEW pay-per-views, they tend to end on the later side. So let's jump right in. They had three matches on the 0 hour pre-show. Tony Storm pinned Layla Gray with an inside cradle. She looked shocked when she picked up the win. Then later on with Lexi Nair in the back, she was over the moon. Over the moon this woman was. That she picked up her first win on pay-per-view, even though it wasn't actually on the pay-per-view. She said AEW is officially Tony time. This woman is out of her mind. Deonna Purrazzo shows up, and she mockingly introduces herself to Toni Storm as if this is their first time meeting. She's playing along, and she pitches a first-time-ever, quote-unquote, first-time-ever match between these two women for Collision next Saturday, the first-ever Collision that will also, like Dynamite, be simulcast live on Max. And Tony, of course, accepts the challenge. She's very excited for this and told her, she thanked her for the opportunity. This is the match I wanted, she said. Of course, the two of them wrestled on the Revolution card last year. Tony doesn't know this, though. So they're going to do that match next Saturday. We had Jeff Jarrett against QT Marshall. Another QT Marshall pre-show match. First, it was Big Justice or AJ, whatever the fuck his name is, the Costco guy. And now he faces Jeff Jarrett. They worked a very basic match. QT is, he's good for heel heat. He knows how to get heat from the crowd. Jarrett, of course, has been doing this for 100 years. And so he's over the people. You know, he's in that weird mode now where even though he's been a heel, I feel like for a good chunk of his career, he's the elder statesman now. And so they play his music, he comes out, and people cheer for him. So, nothing crazy that would take away from anything we were going to see on the main card. Aaron Solo ran down, QT ordered him to grab the guitar, Jay Lethal came out, and he stopped him from doing so. They brawled up the ramp, and that was the last we saw of them. Jarrett planted QT with the stroke, and he picked up the win. The bigger news, actually, had nothing to do with the match itself. The bigger news is that in the back later, they were, I think it was Lexi, was interviewing Jarrett and Sanjay Dutt, Jay Lethal and Satnam Singh. And Jarrett had an announcement and Sanjay was like, what? What are you talking about? And Jarrett said, you know, every year he takes stock of where he is in his career and the year that was and the year coming up. And he said, on Dynamite this Wednesday, he will be on the show to make an important announcement about his career. So they are teasing the possibility that Jeff Jarrett is going to retire. We already have a lot of retirements coming up next year. John Cena is having an entire retirement year. Hiroshi Tanahashi, this is his final full year coming up. He's retiring at the Tokyo Dome in 2026. Fucking Mako Satomura, I think, is retiring in April. Goldberg is having his retirement match in 2025. Now Jeff Jarrett wants to get in on the game here. He wants the tease. I'm just guessing. I mean, he didn't announce anything yet, but what other announcement could there be? What other? Let's think of all the things other than retirement that this announcement could possibly be. What could Jeff Jarrett be announcing on Wednesday, if not retirement? So then it was the Outrunners still out there getting a good reaction. And Top Flight taking on Brian Cage, Lance Archer, Leo Rush, and Action Andretti. Tony Schiavone's cell phone went off during the match. Fucking telemarketers. The Outrunners got taken out at ringside. Archer chokeslammed Dante Martin, had him beat. And Leo Rush tagged himself in, which pissed off Archer. Leo Rush ended up winning with a frog splash. He won the match for the heels. And when it was over, Private Party walked out. In case you forgot, they're the AEW Tag Team Champions. They didn't have a match tonight. They haven't had very many matches at all recently. But they were there, and they walked out, and they played to the crowd. And then they had a little face-off on the ramp with Leo Rush and Action Andretti because they're going to be next in line for a shot at the tag team titles. Probably, I was going to say on Rampage, but Rampage is dead. So it won't be on Rampage. It'll be on Collision, probably. But the dumbest moment, I can't even get into the pay-per-view yet without even mentioning this. The dumbest moment on the entire pre-show. Actually, Retro, I think you're onto something. Retro KOH says that Jarrett just refinanced his loan with Conrad. I think you might be onto something there. Save with Conrad. He went to savewithconrad.com. And he's so excited, he's going to tell all of us about it. Jarrett wants one more title run. Yeah, okay. Just what we need. John Moxley needs another aging veteran to get in the ring with. Yeah, that's a great idea. The dumbest moment on the entire pre-show was Renee asking somebody, I don't remember who it was, because she was on set with RJ City, and it might have been Matt Menard. And she asked the question, because they were talking about the main event match tonight on the pay-per-view. And it was Renee asking someone else, why would Jon Moxley choose a four-way as a stipulation to defend his championship in the main event on this show? I don't know, Renee. Why don't you ask him? Wouldn't that be the sensible thing to do? Maybe you should ask him, since you have more access to him than anybody else. What kind of fucking question is that? Do they not realize how dumb this makes her look? That she just completely has to avoid any and all questions about Moxley and what they're doing and what her husband is doing. He's going around maiming people, hitting people with weapons and trying to kill them and pour bleach down their throat. Like, do they not realize how fucking dumb this makes this woman look? That was the great segue into the pay-per-view, because then it was time for the main card. And they opened with a rematch from Full Gear. This was part of the Continental Classic. It was Will Ospreay one-on-one with Kyle Fletcher. This was the first of two semifinal matches in the Continental Classic here on this show. In this case, it was the winner of the Blue League facing the runner-up of the Gold League, which was Will Ospreay. And Fletcher, of course, won the Blue League. Ospreay came in, he was the runner-up to Ricochet in the Gold League. Why they did it this way? You'd have to ask Tony Khan, but you probably shouldn't bother because he ain't going to give you an answer. 96% of the time, you will not get an answer out of this man. I saw there was another pre-show scrum or media call or whatever it was the other day, and I just read like a summary of it. And of the eight questions that were asked, I think he answered two of them. Everything else was, I can't talk about that. I can't talk about that. Or he avoided the question. So it's like, even if you wanted to ask Tony, why would you change the rules up the way that you did this year? I doubt you would get a straight answer. So it doesn't really matter. Early on, out at ringside, Ospreay jumped off the ring steps and he tried for a Hurricanrana. Fletcher, though, held on. He muscled him up, and he powerbombed him hard on the edge of the ring. Fletcher then lawn darted Ospreay into the barricade. And then he went, he stood on top of the barricade, and Fletcher began to play to the crowd, which would give Ospreay time to do what he was doing on the outside. So Fletcher is standing on the barricade, and he sees a sign that says, Ospreay better. And he grabs the sign, and he tears it up. So then, I think it was the same fan, he pulls out another sign that says, Ospreay still better. I thought that was funny. Whether it was a planted fan or not, probably not, but even if it was, I thought that was funny. When we turn back to Ospreay, though, he was bleeding profusely. So we had blood here in the first match on the main card. And what was great about it is that Fletcher was wearing all white, right down to the white boots. So he, you know, took Ospreay's blood. He was rubbing the blood on his boots, which made for that great visual. Ospreay tried to fight back. Fletcher lawn darted him into the middle turnbuckle. And Ospreay now, he's bleeding buckets. Okay, at first, it's like, all right, he's wearing kind of the crimson mask, but now he's like leaking blood all over the place. And Fletcher is taking his time. He takes too long, though, and Ospreay explodes up with a lariat. And both men end up flying out of powerbomb attempts. Ospreay, though, flies into an Os cutter. Took him down with it. Got a two count. Fletcher countered a hidden blade into a lariat. As he went for the kill, though, Ospreay managed a poison Rana, and before Fletcher collapsed, he threw a desperation hidden blade, so now both men were down. And then came my least favorite part of the entire match, which was they're on their knees, and we get dueling headbutts. Now, even if on a majority of the headbutts, they were doing it in such a way where they were trying to protect each other, I fucking hate that spot. One thing to give a headbutt. It's another thing to go, oh, here, let me smack my head into yours. Okay, let me smack my head into yours. And then back and forth and back and forth we go. I just think it's fucking stupid. So we had the back and forth there for a while. We don't need to see that. Fletcher tried a schoolboy, tried cheating in various ways, feet on the ropes, hooking the tights. He got caught, though. Fletcher shoved Paul Turner, the referee, who shoved him back. He shoved him right into a hidden blade by Ospreay. And Ospreay covers him. He gets the dramatic two count. Fletcher then pulls Paul Turner into Ospreay, which allows him to hit a charging boot and a brain buster. Got a very close near fall. Hits an elevated Liger bomb. Again, Ospreay kicks out. Fletcher tried for a brain buster. Ospreay popped out of it into a snap hurricane rana. He held on, hit a Styles clash, and he picked up the win. Their first match at Full Gear was one of the best matches all year. That first match was just tremendous, and it was a huge win for Kyle Fletcher because it was the biggest win of his life, and it was a huge credibility boost to a guy that they are trying to push and turn into somebody. They're trying to take somebody who was a nobody as a single star. I mean, he was a nobody. On the grand scale, as a single star, Kyle Fletcher was a nobody. And now they've tried to make him into a somebody, right? They have him with Don Callis. He shaved his head. He's trying to change his whole look, his whole persona. But the best way to turn this guy into somebody and try to turn him into money is to give him big wins over people that have credibility, people who are more credible than him. That's why that was the biggest win and the biggest match of his career. And they killed it. So they went out there here tonight on this show. They had a tall order to try to top what they did at Full Gear. I don't think they did, but that was an excellent match. This was excellent as well. This may have been the best opener all year, as far as opening matches go. Ospreay bleeding so much, so early in the match, it put him behind the eight ball. And so he had to come from behind to pick up the win. You know, when we first learned of the groups for this tournament, we had the Blue League and we had the Gold League. And when we found out who was going to be in which league, even before that, even, I thought, okay, coming out of what we saw at Full Gear, Ospreay and Fletcher in the tournament, they go to the finals. You have Fletcher beat Ospreay again, right? You really want to give this guy a credibility boost and give him a push? Let him beat Will Ospreay twice. let Kyle Fletcher win the Continental Classic. And that way, if Ospreay is going to win the AEW World title in 2025, which I believe he will, probably this summer coming up, you've already got a ready-made number one contender for him. He could be the very first challenger out of the gate. Kyle Fletcher, hey, it's me. I beat you twice. If anybody deserves a shot at the world championship, it's me, right? So I'm kind of looking at the long game here and how you could take this great feud between these two and actually manufacture an eventual world title match out of it. So that's kind of how my mind was working and what I thought maybe they would do. I thought that's what they should do. So they didn't do that. Once the semifinals were set, though, and I saw what they were doing, we were talking about this in my review on Wednesday night. I said, this is Okada. This is Okada all the way. It's going to be Okada, and we're going to get a confrontation when it's all said and done between him and Kenny Omega. That's what I think they were setting up for, and we saw tonight how that played out. But in a perfect world, yes, Kyle Fletcher would have gone all the way, and I think that would have been an even bigger stamp of approval on him, right? Because now he gets a belt out of it. But just the people that he works with and, you know, racking up more points than all of them and beating Ospreay second time, it's all just part of trying to make Kyle Fletcher into something he wasn't before. One of the things about this tournament, even though he didn't win, and there's going to be a lot of people saying, oh, he's buried, oh, he's done, oh, he's ice cold. Don't listen to those people. They don't know what they're talking about. The bottom line is, even though he didn't win, and I do think that was probably a mistake, Kyle Fletcher went in there in this tournament and he racked up more points in his group than anybody else. And he went to the pay-per-view and he went to the semifinals. And of all the people he lost to one of the biggest stars in the entire company, who he already beat once. So now they're tied, one win apiece. We're going to get a rubber match at some point. This is not the end of Kyle Fletcher. That's on Tony Khan to make sure. This is not the end of Kyle Fletcher. Hopefully he has some sort of plan where he's going to go from here, because Kyle Fletcher could very well end up getting ice cold. I'm not saying that there's not a risk that that isn't going to happen, right? It's a very big risk that that could happen. That's on Tony Khan to make sure that it doesn't. Because up to this point, they've done a very good job with this guy. Kyle Fletcher is in a much better position now than he was in even 2 months ago. I don't want to see them squander that. But Will Ospreay picks up the win here. He's moving on to the finals against who? We didn't know yet, but we were going to find out because they went right into the second semifinal match in the Continental Classic with the reigning Continental Champion, Kazuchika Okada, taking on Ricochet, the winner of the Gold League. Boy, this is a guy who has been talked about a lot of late. Okada was the clear fan favorite here. Okada is the clear fan favorite most times now when we see him. The people just love Okada. I mean, what's not to like? Especially watching him tonight. What's not to love about this guy? But this really was a battle of two heels. Okada has been positioned as a heel. He's been part of a faction for a good chunk of the year that tried to murder Kenny Omega. Okay, that should make him a heel. But in this match, he was the de facto babyface. And for all of the people talking about how awful Ricochet has been lately and how much of a geek he's looked like, yes, he has. He has looked like a geek. That's the point. That's what he's going for. For all the people talking about how awful the Ricochet makeover has been, the Ricochet gimmick has been, boy, he sure does have a lot of people talking about him, doesn't he? Way more than they ever did when he was in WWE. That could be a bad thing. I'm not ready to say that it's a bad thing because he's in the middle of trying to get this character over. It's a heel character. I think there are some people who think that a lot of what's going on is either an active burial or, you know, he's going out there and thinking he's cool, but he's actually burying himself. I see it as this is a coordinated attempt to get this new obnoxious heel persona over, and it seems to be working a little bit. How far can he go with it? I don't know. How much success will he have with it? Time will tell. But I laugh when I still see comments from people saying how awful this Ricochet stuff is. Oh my God, it's the worst thing on the show. Meanwhile, you know, look at the reactions that he's getting. Yes, people are throwing toilet paper at him. That's the point. They've leaned into it.
Whether you're starting or scaling your company's security program, demonstrating top-notch security practices and establishing trust is more important than ever. Vanta automates compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more, saving you time and money while helping you build customer trust. Plus, you can streamline security reviews by automating questionnaires and demonstrating your security posture with a customer-facing trust center, all powered by Vanta AI. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vanta to manage risk and prove security in real time. Get $1,000 off Vanta when you go to vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off.
It's like I said it the other night when they were at the Hammerstein. I said it's the Jimmy Rave thing. And it became a fun thing for people to do, to throw toilet paper at Jimmy Rave. That kind of became his whole gimmick. But for what Ricochet is doing right now, it fits. People should not be bowing down to this man when he comes out. They're not supposed to be cheering for him. They're supposed to hate him. They're supposed to think, oh God, this fucking guy. It actually seems to be working a little bit, but how far he can go with it, I don't know. But here, we got, at the beginning of this match, we got a na-na-na-na, hey-hey-hey, you're bald chant from the crowd, which I just thought was fantastic. Okada did another, he did a spot here. I fucking love this spot. Ricochet is sitting on his ass in the middle of the ring. Okay, Okada has him down. He's sitting in the ring. And Okada begins to hit the ropes. And he's going back and forth. And then he stops. Now he's hitting the ropes in the other way. What's he setting up to do? He stops behind Ricochet, just pauses, and then just smacks him in the back of the head. And the place went crazy. And they chanted, holy shit, like it was a big spot. Didn't even take a bump. He got a holy shit chant. Fucking love Okada. It's impossible to boo this man. So Ricochet slowed the pace down. And he tried to keep Okada grounded. Okada spiked him with a DDT. Ricochet answered with a lion salt and a running shooting star press. He went up top. He rolled through a 450. Okada, though, hit the air raid crash neck breaker. Hit the top rope elbow. He did the Rainmaker flip off pose. Ricochet spun out of the ripcord, though, when he was setting up for the Rainmaker. After a whole series of counters, Okada, he fired off a drop kick. He went for a tombstone. Ricochet countered into the vertigo. Only got two. Then he hit a shooting star press. Now he's loading up for the spirit gun. Okada ducks it. He hits another drop kick that led to a double down. Ricochet tried again for the spirit gun. Okada ducked and he turned Ricochet inside out with a Rainmaker. And he got the pin to advance to the finals. They worked a noticeably slower pace here than Ospreay and Fletcher did in the opener. But, you know, they brought him up in the spots where they had to bring the crowd up. They brought him up. Not anywhere close to as good as the opener. But I had fun with it. I thought it was a fun match. It gives us a final that, again, I predicted the other night. I figured, as predictable as it was, I figured this is what we're going to end up with. And so it's set up. Okada and Ospreay, a match we haven't seen in quite a while, but it gave us Okada and Ospreay as a final for later in the show. Somebody threw a roll of toilet paper in the ring as Ricochet, not at Ricochet, it landed in the middle of the ring as Ricochet was sitting there. And the fans cheered. Then Swerve Strickland's music brought him out on stage and he congratulated Ricochet for making it as far in the Continental Classic as he did last year. Because Ricochet was making fun of him for that on TV. But he said, Ricochet, you said you were going to win it. He said, being a man of his word, Swerve said that if Ricochet blew it, he was going to make him feel it. All Ricochet has done since coming to AEW is run his mouth. Says Ricochet talks a lot of mess, so Strickland is here to clean up the mess. And Prince Nana, at that moment, he struts out with a wheelbarrow full of toilet paper. This man would have been ripped to shreds. If he came walking out there with a wheelbarrow full of toilet paper 5 years ago when the pandemic first hit, they would have murdered this man. That stuff was like fucking gold. But here he is. He's got his wheelbarrow with all the Charmin and everything, and he's rolling it down to the ring, and he's tossing rolls of toilet paper out to the crowd. And Swerve says, look, he wants to help Ricochet have a clean slate for the new year. And he counts down. He goes, don't throw anything. I'm going to count down to three. And we're going to wish Ricochet a happy new year. And he counts down and he says, happy new year. He goes, happy new year, Trevor. As all the fans throw toilet paper at Ricochet, he's standing in the ring. He's draped like streamers, except it's toilet paper. He's draped in toilet paper. And there were no funny bird noises. There was no shit-eating grin or smirk on his face. Ricochet had a look on his face like he was furious. He had a look on his face that makes me think and hope that on TV this week, when we see him, he's not going to be acting goofy. He's not going to be laughing. He's not going to be going, aha! He's not going to be doing, why I sound like Mickey Mouse. He's not going to be doing any of that shit. He's going to attempt to murder Swerve Strickland. That's the look that he had on his face. That's as serious as I've seen this man since he came into AEW. And that is how the segment ended. Ricochet, he loses nothing by losing this match to Okada. First of all, losing to Okada, it doesn't hurt you because Okada, of course, is Okada. Okada has rarely been beaten. He's highly protected by Tony Khan. So a loss to Okada does not hurt Ricochet. He won the Gold League. He fell short in the semifinals. And now he's pivoting into a program with a former AEW world champion. This is what I mean when people say, oh, Ricochet, look at this. He lost and he's standing there drenched in toilet paper. He's done. He's finished. How could he recover from this? How could he come back? I know, right? I mean, how could he heal? Who the people are supposed to react to as a heel, ever going to recover from people throwing toilet paper at him? Oh, heavens, I have no idea. I just love it. I love the overreactions from people. It just makes me crazy sometimes. The more he has leaned into the heel stuff, I'm not even talking about social media because I don't know who he's trying to pretend to be on social media or whatever, but even the social media stuff, it's very clear he's leaning into a gimmick. And ever since he started leaning into the heel stuff on TV, right, as geeky and goofy as it makes him look, I find that more entertaining than I did when he first came in and he was just Ricochet. That's why I don't mind them trying something like this with him, because what's the alternative? The alternative is that he's just Ricochet. And he goes in there and he has very good matches with people who can do the things that he does. Who cares? That's fucking boring. This is what a lot of people were hoping for when he was still in WWE, that he would be involved in stories and there would be some kind of character development, and it never came. We never got it. Now we're getting some with him here. I'm willing to see where it goes because I find this at least mildly more interesting than I did with what he was doing before. So let's see. Let's see what he can do with it. Working with Swerve, you know what? That's not a bad spot for him to be in coming out of this tournament. Although I will tell you, I am surprised that they did not go with a Swerve Bobby Lashley rematch on this show. I actually like the 8-match format. I hope they stick to that. I think 7 or 8 matches is fine on these pay-per-views, but I was surprised that one of them was not Swerve and Lashley. And Lashley, the Hurt Syndicate wasn't on the show at all. None of the members of the Hurt Syndicate showed up tonight. We go to the back, and a bloody Will Ospreay is being checked on by the doctor when Renee approaches and says that he's wrestled Okada about 10 times. Actually, he says he's wrestled Okada 10 times. He's lost like 8 of them. And so he asks the crowd to get behind him, and they all, you could hear them in the arena, they all let out a big cheer. He was out there, he was like Dusty in Florida, right? Reach out and touch me, touch my hand, and let me feel you. And not in that way. But crowd got behind him. After he beats Okada, he says he's going to Disney World, and he closed by saying, in the immortal words of Tony Khan, let's fucking go. When did that become Tony Khan's quote? I think he said that once. Didn't he say that once off the air at one of the tapings? Apparently that's Tony Khan's thing. He says, let's fucking go. Not going to be able to say LFG anymore because WWE's got a show coming out called LFG. Although I don't think that's what it stands for. I think it has a different meaning. We had our first of two women's championship matches on this show. Mariah May defending her AEW Women's World title against Thunder Rosa in a Tijuana street fight. This had falls count anywhere rules. Nigel McGuinness said that Thunder Rosa looked like Danny Trejo, the actor, which I'm not sure she would be flattered by that comparison, but I guess when he saw her come out dressed in the leather vest and what she was wearing, he thought Danny Trejo. I have never looked at Thunder Rosa and thought, hey, that looks like Danny Trejo, I'm just saying. So Rosa went and hugged her father, who was in the front row. Rosa threw weapons into the ring. Took a long time, though, as Mariah crawled up the ramp early on. And they end up on stage. Mariah grabs a bottle of tequila. Takes a swig and then spits it out in Rosa's face. Rosa then stumbles to her feet and tackles Mariah through a table that was set up vertically against one of the entrance tunnels. So then Rosa hesitated. She allowed Mariah to throw a trash can at her, and Rosa went tumbling down the ramp. As Mariah approached her back at ringside, Rosa blasted her. She turned around and hit her in the head or the face or whatever it was with a breakaway bottle because it shattered. Only got a two count. So back in the ring, Rosa grabbed a pinata that she brought to the ring and emptied out what was inside, which was hundreds of thumbtacks. But as she went for her Fire Thunder driver, Mariah was able to escape into Mayday onto the tacks. So they ended up outside the ring, and Mariah sent Rosa into the ring steps, and then she turned and she saw Thunder Rosa's father in the front row. Now, this is a woman who smacked her own mother across the face at Wembley, okay? So she won't hesitate to go after someone's parents. If she would do that to her own mother, there's no telling what she would do to Thunder Rosa's father. But she walks over to her dad. He was wearing, looked like a cowboy hat, took the hat off of his head, and then ripped the cane away from him. He had a cane with him. And she begins to mock him. I laughed. This was great. I may be going to hell, but I thought this was great. So then Mariah grabs a piece of barbed wire. I don't know. I don't even know if it was barbed wire. It looked like, what did it look like? It looked like, I didn't see the barbs on it. So I don't know if it was meant to be barbed wire or just some sort of rubber pipe. I don't know what it was. She wraps it around her leg, though. And went to go charge at Rosa, who moved, and then Mariah crashed and burned. So Rosa grabs the cane, barely tapped Mariah with it, sets a table up outside the ring. Rosa throws Mariah back inside, and she wraps a chain around Mariah's throat, and she begins to choke her, but she let go of it to go set up a chair. Rosa, again, she goes to choke Mariah with the chain, but when she does so, Mariah reaches into the bag that Rosa had brought with her. And she throws dirt in Rosa's face, which the announcers mention is from the Tijuana graveyard. Okay. Is that where it's from? Okay. So she throws dirt in her face. And with Rosa now blinded, they spill out onto the apron. And Mariah sets her up for Storm Zero off the apron, down through the table that was set up on the floor. And because it's false count anywhere, she covers Rosa and she gets the three count. I was going to lose my shit if Thunder Rosa kicked out of that fucking move. Okay, you do that through a table, you better not be kicking out. And she didn't, and Mariah retained the title. Excalibur called it a pile driver, which I guess technically it was, but I don't know if he realized it was Storm Zero. But yes, technically it was a pile driver through the table. This was okay. I mean, as garbage and plunder matches go, this was okay. They never established any real heat between these two that would warrant a stipulation like this, though. So, you know, you go into a Tijuana street fight, and it's basically a glorified death match. This feud did not warrant a death match, but they did one anyway. I guess they felt they needed one. I don't think they needed this, frankly. I think you could have just had a good pro wrestling match between these two women. With Rose's father at ringside, you could still work him into the match in some way if you want to. But they had all the garbage and the plunder, and, you know, that aspect of it was fine. It just felt like doing a hardcore match for the sake of doing a hardcore match. And it didn't help that nobody believed that Thunder Rosa had a chance here, right? Nobody believes that Mariah May is losing this championship before Toni Storm comes to her senses. Or we have a reveal that she's had her wits about her the entire time, and this is just the latest great performance of timeless Toni Storm. Whatever the reveal is, Mariah May is not losing her women's world title until we get the rematch in Australia between her and Toni Storm. So there was no drama about the outcome of the match, even from the opening bell. Now we had MJF, and we had Adam Cole. This is a match that we got in the main event of Wembley Stadium over a year ago. They wrestled in front of 70,000 plus people. They had an excellent match. It was at the peak of their partnership and their whole alliance, their whatever you want to call it. And that really is where it peaked out. The very next month is when Adam Cole broke his ankle. Things just completely went downhill from there. It was never the same again after that. MJF came back in May. Adam Cole came back several months later. Took a while longer for him to come back. And they decided, or Tony Khan decided, or whoever decided, Tony obviously, we have to resolve this. We're not done with this yet. We can't just ignore it. We have to go back to it. We have to wrap it up. So we've had these segments on TV, and the problem also has been that MJF has not been on TV that much because he's been away filming a movie. So most weeks it was MJF sending him pre-tape promos. He wasn't even physically there, and it was very obvious whenever they would splice it into the show, oh, he's from his home. It's like they did what they could, but him not being there really hurt whatever it was that they were doing. At first it was, you know, Roderick Strong was involved. I don't give a shit about that. It was never about Roderick Strong. It was never about Kyle O'Reilly. It was never about even Matt Taven and Mike Bennett. They were part of the Undisputed Kingdom, just like Roddy was. It wasn't about them. It really wasn't. It's about Cole and MJF, and nobody gave a shit about any of the other people involved in this. MJF went in there. He beat Roderick Strong at Full Gear. He broke his arm. Cole's been running around with Taven and Bennett. The people could not possibly care any less. Now, this match is for the Dynamite Diamond Ring, which has absolutely no bearing on anything. It is completely inconsequential. It was a complete non-factor in this feud. It was a complete non-factor in this match. So this did not even need to be for the Dynamite Diamond Ring. MJF is never losing the ring anyway. So I'm not even sure what the point is of having to defend it every single year. He's had it now for 5 years in a row. It's going to be 6 years in a row. He'll fucking retire with that ring. This was about ending this feud once and for all. Now, Taven and Bennett were standing ringside, I guess to shield the diamond ring, to protect it. Cole wanted the Panama Sunrise. MJF bailed, only to pull Cole face first into the ring steps outside. The crowd started chanting, "He's our scumbag," at MJF, and he got in the ring and he yelled back, "If I needed your help, I would ask, so shut the fuck up." Then he got booed. But all of this was to divert attention from Adam Cole, who, when they cut back to him, came up bleeding. And this was, you know, as soon as I saw the blood coming from Cole's face, I just groaned. I just groaned. I said, you know, we had blood in the opening match, and it played into the story. It's going to play into Ospreay later on. Kenny, you know, how's he going to be in the match with Okada? We saw him in the back, right? He was all being bandaged up by the doctor. And now, all of a sudden, here we go again. We have more blood. So as soon as I saw that, I just groaned. And then it was even worse when MJF started bleeding. All right, because if one bleeds, the other has to bleed. The thing is, like, given the history between these two, if you were going to have a match on the show that was going to have blood, honestly, this is the one where it would have made the most sense. But I just feel like because we had Ospreay and he was bleeding so much in that opening match, it made it less effective here. At least for me, it did. So I saw that and I was like, eh. Taven and Bennett, they were cheering Cole on. I thought for sure these guys were turning. I said this weeks ago. I said, Taven and Bennett, they are going to turn on this fucking guy on this show. So I'm watching them the entire time. Cole tried for Panama Sunrise again. MJF sidestepped him, and Cole came up limping. So MJF targeted the surgically repaired ankle. He posted the leg. And then he started trash-talking Thunder Rosa's father at ringside, called him Yosemite Sam. He did have this magnificent mustache, and he did look a little bit like Yosemite Sam. I'm not going to lie. So MJF did a Fargo strut that led to Cole posting him. That's when he got busted open. Back inside, Cole hit the Panama Sunrise. He lowered the boom, only got two. Cole went for the boom again, but MJF crumbled. You know, I feel like I have to specify what I'm talking about when I say lower the boom, because every time I say boom now, I think of these fucking Costco guys. He went for the running knee strike. But MJF crumbled. And as Cole was talking smack, MJF, he dove in for the chop block to regain control. So both guys start slugging it out. MJF screaming, "I never cared about you, I never cared about you." And Cole fires off a super kick. MJF, though, he swept the legs out, got the figure four leg lock applied. Cole flipped MJF off. He rolled over, which caused the pressure to be on MJF. So he broke the hold. So as Bryce Remsburg is checking on Adam Cole, MJF goes outside the ring, and he's going for the diamond ring. But he runs into Taven and Bennett, who are blocking his path. So MJF, he smacks the ring steps with his hands, and he drops to the ground, and he starts screaming as if they attacked him. So this gets Bryce's attention. Referee turns around, and he sees that MJF is down on the ground, and Taven and Bennett are standing there. They're going, "Oh, no, 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 we didn't do anything. We didn't do anything." And so Remsburg ejects them. And the people cheered this, by the way. MJF is the heel. But the people largely cheered this because, of course, they're like, "Yeah, get these fucking guys out of here. We don't give a shit about them. We didn't want them here in the first place." So they get ejected. MJF grabs the ring. He charges at Cole, who eats a super kick and puts the ring on. And Cole went to use it. MJF, though, hit a low blow. And then he hit the Heat Seeker and he pinned Adam Cole. After the match, MJF grabs a chair. And he places it around Cole's ankle. He's going to break his ankle again. When Roderick Strong returns, and he hits the ring. You could sense my level of enthusiasm here. So he hits the ring. MJF bails up the ramp. Thinks he's making a great getaway. Kyle O'Reilly comes out from one of the entrance tunnels. And he grabs MJF, and he brings him back to the ring with him. So now MJF is in the ring, and he's stuck. Between O'Reilly and Strong. He's got nowhere to go, and he's begging off. And I'm still, in my mind, I'm just thinking, because Cole's down in the corner, and I'm thinking, okay, what's about to happen, right? Something is about to happen here. Nothing happened. They gave MJF a high-low, wiped him out. O'Reilly helped Cole up, hugged him, and then with Roddy, they held MJF for Adam Cole to blast him in the head with the Dynamite Diamond Ring. So Cole, Strong, and O'Reilly, they all hug, which initially got boos, by the way. When these guys hugged, you could hear there were boos coming from the crowd. Taven and Bennett, they came back down to the ring to join the Love Fest. And then there was a mix. You could hear cheers as well. I was waiting for the turn, but it never came. They all left as one big happy family. We'll see if that continues. I have my doubts. As far as the match itself, the match was fine. It wasn't a bad match. It didn't have the juice that it should have. It didn't have the juice that it would have had if they would have done this match a lot earlier this year, if you had two guys who were healthy. It was nothing like, I'm sure, what they envisioned it being. This needs to be it. This has to be the end of this. I can't believe how MJF has gone from being world champion and being the number one guy in the company to where he is right now. I understand he was hurt for a while, but then he came back and he had those great matches with Will Ospreay. Both matches were great. Two of the best matches all year. The one on TV, the 60-minute match, or the whatever, 59-minute match. And then the one at Wembley. And ever since then, he had the thing with Daniel Garcia, and then it's him and Cole again, but then he's been gone filming a movie. He's been a complete non-factor on these shows. And if Tony Khan needs anything, he needs people like Kenny Omega back. He needs people like MJF to be featured in a prominent way and to be full-time at their best for him heading into this new year. Dynamite, they're talking about what a new era this is and a big era this is, because they're going to be simulcasting on Max. It's going to be the same old shit if they don't get some of these people locked into interesting, exciting feuds going forward. MJF should be one of those people. What they have been having him do, he has been a total non-factor on these shows. And it's sad to see. Hopefully, they can change that as they head into the new year. Continuing on with this is just a recipe for more mediocrity. And I'm not even sure that they are done with this. You know, MJF lost here, but if he wants his revenge, he's going to have to round up some people because he's outnumbered right now. Which is why I still feel like I don't know about this whole Cole and Undisputed Kingdom thing. It wouldn't even make sense at this point if they turned on him, let's say, on Wednesday. After helping him tonight, it would be stupid. It wouldn't even make sense. So I don't know. I don't know where this goes from here, but I'm hoping that this was the end. My fear is that it is not the end, but that is my hope. We had Konosuke Takeshita against Powerhouse Hobbs for the AEW International Championship. It was nice to see Powerhouse Hobbs getting a singles match on a pay-per-view, let alone a championship match, right? We don't get to see this very often. So I was glad, even though there really wasn't much of a story here, I was glad when they added this match to the pay-per-view, because we don't get to see Powerhouse Hobbs in this situation very often. And Takeshita is great. Takeshita should be defending his title on this show. You put these two in the ring together, there's history there, obviously, going back with the Callis family. So, I mean, there was history there, but not some great story coming into this. Takeshita, he dropped Hobbs on his surgically repaired knee on the edge of the apron. The knee then became the story of the match. Even when Hobbs would hit a move, like a spine buster or something, he would land on his knees, right? He would wince in pain. Takeshita countered a power slam into the Bastard Driver, which was pretty impressive, the way he kind of maneuvered into it. Later on, Takeshita, he superplexed Hobbs, huge superplex, and then followed up with a top rope senton. Takeshita waited for Hobbs to get up, and then he charged at him, but Hobbs put him down with a spine buster for a near fall. Hobbs then lowered the straps on his gear, and Takeshita rolled to the apron to avoid him. Hobbs got Takeshita on the ropes, and he power slammed him from the top rope. Power slammed the guy. So instead of going for the pin, Hobbs now is selling the knee. Hobbs tried to remove his knee brace. He needed help from Aubrey Edwards to get it off. Takeshita put Hobbs in a guillotine submission, then he released it and hit his raging fire finish to pick up the win and retain the international title. They went over 15 minutes, and this is one of those instances where I actually think they would have benefited from shaving off a few minutes. I think if you shave off 3 or 4 minutes, it would have done them a lot of good. There's a lot of awkwardness when they were on the ropes. Initially, they fell. They were planning. It was the superplex spot. And they slipped and they fell. And so they ended up back on the ropes, and the fans were chanting at them, please be careful, as they climbed back to the top. But they eventually did hit the superplex. I thought it turned into a hell of a match here. The fans were into it, so even though Hobbs lost, he could gain from it. If I actually believed in Tony Khan to follow up with Hobbs on this, right, even though he lost, right, he looked good in defeat. He had a competitive match. Right, one of the better matches on the entire show. Okay, build on that. Heading into a brand new year. What do you got planned for Powerhouse Hobbs? I don't have the faith that they have anything planned for Powerhouse Hobbs. That's, again, my concern. Prove me wrong. But here's a guy who you would think, right, they would also have him in the mix. They would work him into the mix. Why wasn't he more active and vocal against the Death Riders as they were starting their little mini invasion of AEW? We saw Orange Cassidy, and we saw Daniel Garcia, and we saw Top Flight and all these people, but why is someone like Hobbs, you know, not involved in that story? I don't know where he goes from here. I would love to sit here and tell you, though, that I have faith that they'll have something for him coming out of this, but I don't. As far as Takeshita goes, he's going to the Tokyo Dome next weekend. He's wrestling Shingo Takagi. We're getting a double title match. That's going to be awesome. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. The holidays are upon us. I like the lights and the decorations, even the music. I don't hate the music. Unless I hear All I Want for Christmas by Mariah Carey, then I immediately turn the channel or I flee the store because I just can't handle it. It's everywhere, every year. You know what I find relaxing? One of the free streaming services I watch has a crackling fireplace channel. Seriously, I put that on in the background while I work, and it puts me in my happy place. For some of you, it might be a movie night with the family and a mug of hot chocolate. Whatever it may be, therapy is a great way to bring yourself some comfort that never goes away, even when the season changes. Therapy is something that can drastically improve your life in many different ways, whether it's discovering something about yourself that maybe you didn't know about before, or how to cope with some kind of stress in your life that's really dragging you down, or how to set boundaries in your life. Therapy can teach you new ways to cope with the things that may be holding you back from being your best self. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be flexible and suited to your schedule. That's what makes it so convenient. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for any reason at no additional charge. Find comfort this December with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. Two women who had an awesome match at Full Gear last month were Mercedes Moné and Chris Statlander. Mercedes went out there on that show, and she had the best match of her AEW career. Chris Statlander, I think, that night also had the best match of her AEW career. And she's had some really good matches, but I feel like that match with Mercedes in November probably was her best. And then the stuff with Willow, I would put right behind that. So when I saw they were doing a rematch here, just doing a rematch, not much of a story behind why. I mean, she got beat fair and square, but they were doing a rematch. I was excited because I said, well, the first match was great. And I'm sure the second one will be too. The question was, doing the rematch, was the idea that we're going to put the title on Statlander this time? And I figured no, because if for no other reason, Mercedes, who is undefeated so far, is going to the Tokyo Dome, as is Takeshita. She's going to the Tokyo Dome next weekend. Now, she's not defending the TBS title. She's defending her other title. But even still, would they beat her right before she leaves for the dome? I already knew the answer in my head, but that was the question coming into the match. Crowd was very quiet for the first half of this match. They were respectful, but they were quiet. I mean, you could hear a pin drop for long stretches of this match. And it just felt like the crowd was not invested. The crowd just really could not bring themselves to care. And they were out there, they were working, they were dancing, they were going back and forth and trading different moves. And outside of a big spot here and there, the people was just like pulling teeth. It just didn't seem like they were into this at all for the first half. And then Mercedes tried for the Three Amigos, and she kept going, and it was more like Ocho. She hit like 8 suplexes, and with each suplex that she did, the crowd got more and more and more into it. So that's the first time really where they woke up during this match. She went for a frog splash to Statlander and hit it, only got a 2 count. Statlander avoided the double knees and then hit a package pile driver for a near fall. Statlander acted shocked that she didn't get the pin. I have no idea why. She's been there for a while. She knows. She has to know that in this company, pile drivers are treated as transition moves. Very rarely does anybody win with a pile driver in this company. So I don't know why she was so shocked. Not only that, we weren't even done with the pile drivers in this match. Don't act so shocked. A little while later, both women, they tumbled to the floor. And as they fell out of the ring, I think it was Mercedes, she grabbed the hold of the ring skirt, and they pulled the ring skirt down. So the whole side of the ring was exposed. Statlander was about to be counted out after Mercedes dropped her on the floor with her moneymaker finish. She was in jeopardy of being counted out. But Mercedes opts to go and break the count, and she goes back outside. She places Statlander's boot over the frame of the ring, and her boot got caught in one of the braids or whatever it was, one of the bands. So Mercedes gets back into the ring, and she could have won by count out again, but she opts to go for the double knees from the apron to the floor. Statlander is trying to break free. She can't get free, so she unties her boot. Her boot is still stuck, but she manages to free herself. And Mercedes goes to the apron. She jumps at Statlander. Statlander catches her and gives her an F5 onto the apron. Then back inside, she gives her another F5. So Statlander tries climbing the ropes. She gets her legs swept out from under her, and Mercedes then gets her in position for a tombstone pile driver on the apron, and she delivers, my heart was in my fucking throat. She delivers a very scary looking sit out tombstone pile driver on the apron. Same move that Owen Hart used on Steve Austin when he dropped him on his head at SummerSlam. She gives her a pile driver on the apron, and Statlander falls to the floor. And Mercedes is in the ring, and she's celebrating because she figures, well, that's it. I'm going to get a count-out win. I'm going to retain my title. And she begins to celebrate. Statlander rolls back into the ring, though, at the count of 9. And the crowd went nuts. And Mercedes begins to yell at her, why won't you just die? She starts slapping her. And Mercedes applies the statement maker submission, counters then into an STF, but Statlander reaches the ropes. Fans begin to chant, fight forever. Mercedes eats a big Statlander lariat, and then she wanted Saturday Night Fever. Mercedes, though, escapes. They traded rolling pin attempts until Mercedes got a seatbelt pin with the leg hooked. Right? Isn't that, that's Darby's move, isn't it? Is it Darby or Orange Cassidy? I think that's Darby's move. But anyway, she had her trapped, and there was no kicking out, and she got the pin. So Mercedes goes up 2-0 on Statlander and retains her TBS championship. She remains undefeated. There was one person I saw in the chat earlier after the match ended who said, where's Camille? Camille is done. Forget about Camille. She's finished. Despite Tony Schiavone, when this match was over, proclaiming this to be better than their first match, he was very declarative about this too. Well, clearly, this was much better than their first match. This was, in fact, not better than their first match. Okay, you don't speak for me. And in my opinion, the first match is still superior to this one. But I felt every bit of that first half of this match. And what I mean by that is it went very slow. It was very quiet. It was very dull. And it was like, if it went 10, 12 minutes, it felt like 10, 12 minutes. But then it started to pick up. in the second half. And they finally got the crowd into it, and we kind of came to the crescendo in the match, and it got very good towards the end. So it was a very strong match. I just can't rank it above the first match they had at Full Gear. It was a very strong match. These two work very well together. But that is now two straight losses to Mercedes for Chris Statlander. Where she goes from here, I don't know. Maybe the third time will be the charm. But if that's the story they want to tell, then that's a story they're going to have to take their time to tell. She cannot just have a third match with Mercedes in a month. You have to build her back up. She has to go and work with other people and win matches. And then in a few months, you could potentially run this match back. And if you want Statlander to be the one to do it, you could build to it. You could build to a third and final match, and she finally pulls off the victory. But you've got to take the time to tell that story, because right now there's no reason to go back to this again. You've done it twice. Mercedes won both times. Fair and square. That's it. That's it. Time to move on. But there wasn't any good reason to go back to this tonight, you know, other than the fact that they had a great match at Full Gear. What was the reason they went back to this match again? Right? That's literally the only reason. Tony Khan said, oh man, they had this great match. The fans really responded to it. Let's do it again. And that's how we got what we got tonight. A lot of this stuff, it's not very deep. Very surface level stuff. We have the finals of the Continental Classic. Kazuchika Okada against Will Ospreay. We had Jim Ross joining on commentary for the final two matches. Ospreay came out. He had dried blood all over his face that he didn't bother to wash off. He had a huge bandage wrapped around his head. And he was woozy on his way down to the ring. He was selling the effects of all the blood loss. But they let him go out there, even though he was stumbling like a drunk man down the aisleway. So they get in the ring before they even touch. The crowd's going nuts. They start chanting, holy shit. So the fans in Orlando tonight, they realize, like, oh, this is a big deal, right? These two guys are a big deal, and so this match is a big deal. And Okada starts to toy with him before he plants him with a neck breaker, and that caused Ospreay's bandage, and this was a few minutes into the match already, but it caused Ospreay's bandage to fall off. And before long, you could see he's bleeding again. Okada wanted a tombstone on the floor. Ospreay hit a hook kick and an os cutter off the barricade. Okada beat the count at 9, rolled right into a springboard dropkick and a follow-up os cutter for 2. Ospreay fired off some Kawada kicks, but as he went for the Stormbreaker, Okada countered into the air raid crash neckbreaker and then hit the top rope elbow. Okada tried a leapfrog. Ospreay put on the brakes, and he caught him with a Styles Clash for a close 2 count. Okada came back. He hit the Rainmaker. Ospreay, though, kicked out. Okada wanted another Rainmaker. Ospreay turned it into a Spanish Fly. He went for the Hidden Blade. Okada, though, hit his dropkick instead, which Ospreay no-sold. Hit a hook kick. Tried another os cutter, but he got dropkicked out of midair. That was cool. Okada tried a Rainmaker. Ospreay ducked and hit a Rainmaker of his own before hitting the Stormbreaker. A super close 2 count. And at this point, crowd was just losing their minds. Now this you could feel like it felt like an Okada match. Like if you've seen Okada's matches, you know what I'm talking about. When they started hitting these this sequence and these sequences of moves here, you could tell, like you could just feel it. So Ospreay wanted a Tiger Driver. Okada flipped out into another Rainmaker, and with both men down, side by side. We got even an overhead shot of them laying side by side. Okada maintained wrist control. So the entire time, he's still holding on to Ospreay's wrist. Ospreay fights back with another hook kick. Okada ducks the Hidden Blade. He wanted the Rainmaker. Ospreay flipped over, tried a Stormbreaker. Okada escaped. He got the wrist, and he hit a Rainmaker to finally put it away and win an excellent match with an excellent closing sequence. This was ripped right out of this final sequence, like the final minute or two, was ripped right out of a G1 final, or it was ripped right out of an Okada New Japan match. Just an excellent closing sequence, had the people on their feet. The only thing is, it didn't drag on as long as a lot of those classic Okada matches typically did in New Japan, where he would really start very slow and he would take his time and be very methodical. And you would turn around and the match would be 35 minutes long, 40 minutes long. Not the case here. They went just shy of 20 minutes. It was perfect as far as the length, and it was a great match. Okada offered a handshake to Ospreay. He accepted. And he got helped to the back by doctors. They played Okada's music very briefly until Christopher Daniels walks out on stage. And he walks out to congratulate Okada on continuing his reign as Continental Champion. He says, normally, this is the part where I would walk down to the ring and present you with your belt. Because the title was still sitting on a podium on stage. He goes, but I can't. And he says that he can't. Because he is no longer, as of this moment, an EVP for AEW. But this man is. And then we got the Tron and the music for Kenny Omega. And everybody goes crazy. And Omega walks out on stage in a suit. Huge ovation. He takes the Continental title down to the ring with him. Gets inside. He hands it to Okada, who holds it up in the air. And they pose face to face. And they were sure, the production was sure to get a shot. They shot it in a way where right in the background behind them, you saw the banner hanging for, not for Revolution, not for Grand Slam. It was hanging for All In Texas, July 12, Globe Life Stadium. Very strategically placed behind them. That was not so subtle, but there it was right behind them. And I will say Omega was very forgiving here because the last time we saw him on Dynamite, if you recall, he was taken out by the Elite. They tried to murder this man. Okada is part of the Elite. But I guess, you know, as an EVP, he's trying to be responsible. He's trying to be a professional. So he just left the ring. And Tony Schiavone says that it'll be some time for Omega, you know, given his injuries and the diverticulitis and everything, it's going to be some time before Omega is able to get himself back into ring shape. And we see him back in the ring. And I just sat here and first of all, I was completely dumbfounded when he said this. But I just sat here and I thought, well, he's got a week. Because he's wrestling Gabe Kidd at the Tokyo Dome next weekend, Tony. So he better get himself in good shape in the next 7 days, because that's about how long he has. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Like, I mean, is it a situation where, like, literally just shows up and, like, okay, what am I doing today? Give me my paycheck. Let me go home. Like, what are we doing here? Like, they literally, like, a week ago on Dynamite just aired a video package promoting Kenny Omega and the fact that he's going to be wrestling at Wrestle Dynasty on January 5th. I don't even know what to say to that comment. I really did. It's like they just say things for the sake of saying them sometimes. Truly, that's what it sounds like. Amazing. So All In is going to be the right place to do that match. It's going to be a big show for them. Obviously, All In not going to be back at Wembley next year, but they're going to be at Texas Stadium, or at least that stadium in Texas. I suppose it's not Texas Stadium. But they're going to try to get 30 or 40,000 people into that venue for what will be, one way or the other, their biggest show of the entire year. And so on the biggest possible stage that you're going to have, it makes sense to want to do that match. This is why Okada won the Continental Classic. So if you're wondering, why would they go with Okada and not go with somebody else? Why not go with a younger guy? Why not go with a Will Ospreay? Why not go with a Kyle Fletcher? Why not go with a Beast Mortos? I'm kidding. But why not go with one of them, right? There's two reasons for it, actually. Number one, and they impressed upon us this very point many times here, Tony Khan wanted to position Okada as the greatest tournament wrestler of all time because he won 4 G1s. This made it number 5 as far as big tournament victories for him. So now he can go around saying 5, like he's King Kong Bundy, But now he's the greatest tournament wrestler ever, right? So they can go around and promote him as that. That's one reason why they had him win. The other reason they had him win is because they don't want him to lose that championship until he wrestles Kenny Omega. I believe he's going to hold on to that Continental title for another 6 or 7 months. If they're going to do the match on July 12th, then they're going to wait until then, and Kenny Omega will probably be the one to beat Okada to win the Continental title. This is the match that Tony wanted to do at Wembley Stadium this year. Not a doubt in my mind. If Kenny was healthy, we would have had Okada Omega at Wembley Stadium for the Continental title. Not, zero doubt in my mind about that. All Kenny's injury did was delay the inevitable. They don't want to beat Okada. They don't want to get the belt off of him until they get to Texas. Those are the two reasons why he won this tournament and why he is still the Continental Champion. Nothing more, nothing less. Could somebody like a Kyle Fletcher have benefited from winning this tournament? Absolutely. And that's, like I said earlier, that's the way that I would have gone with it. Will Ospreay. Could Will Ospreay have benefited after the loss to Fletcher in November, coming back and winning the Continental Classic? And he could have even helped elevate that title, although, you know, it's held by Okada, so I mean, it's how much more are you going to elevate it? But yes, Ospreay could have benefited from it as well. But Ospreay didn't need that title any more than Okada does. So I'm not really sure, other than, you know, giving people a happy ending there, what that even would have accomplished. Ospreay's on to much bigger things in 2025. He doesn't need the Continental title. So it was either Fletcher or just keep the belt on Okada and let him just reign supreme until Kenny is able to come back. I mean, that was really, there really were no other viable options. You're not going to have Mark Briscoe win the tournament. You're not going to have Brody King win the tournament. Darby Allin is being positioned for something else. So he didn't have to win the tournament either. Ricochet didn't need to win it either. He could have. You could have given him a cocky win. He could go around saying, oh, I won the Continental Classic, and he would have had a belt. So yeah, you could have had Ricochet win. But yeah, the other people in the tournament, Daniel Garcia, no. Commander, I mean, give me a fucking break. There were no other realistic winners, if not Fletcher, Ospreay, or Okada. And like I said, Ospreay doesn't need it. And neither does Okada, but that's the reason why they want to keep it on him. It was not a very story-driven tournament, but it was not without its highlights. For the most part, I enjoyed it. When I look at the key takeaways from this tournament, if I had to boil it down to the three things that jump out to me the most as far as the benefits or who benefited from the Continental Classic, I think of three names. I think of Kyle Fletcher, who won his group, and he looked like a star in a way that he never has before. So he didn't win the entire thing, but you can't tell me that he didn't benefit from his performance in this tournament. If you believe that, then you're a fucking fool. Kyle Fletcher benefited. Ricochet benefited. He also didn't win, but Ricochet started to finally come out of his shell with this new character during this tournament. The win that he got over Ospreay at the Hammerstein Ballroom and the way that he took a shortcut to get there, and it's all part of the development of this heel persona of his that I think is going to, in the end, do more good for him than if they would have just kept him as babyface Ricochet. I still think in the end, it's going to work out to his advantage doing what he's doing. Third person who stands out to me as having benefited from this tournament, Shelton Benjamin. And I suppose you can make an argument for Shelton winning the tournament, but I never expected that. Frankly, I would rather Shelton go and take the TNT title from Daniel Garcia, if anything. But Shelton Benjamin has looked fucking great ever since he debuted on television in this company. They have treated this guy in a way that he was never treated in WWE. And it's only been 2 months. And every match that he had in this tournament was at least good, if not very good. And it kept him looking strong. Those are the three people who I think... Ospreay was already a star. those are the three people who I think really benefited, especially Fletcher and Benjamin from this Continental Classic. But then we got into the main event, and it's too bad this wasn't the main event, because this is how the show should have ended. But we weren't done yet, because we had a four-way match for the AEW World Championship with Jon Moxley defending against Orange Cassidy, Switchblade Jay White, and Hangman Adam Page. With a special cameo here from Brie Mode. Even Ricochet's win over Brody King helped him immensely. It did. People don't want to admit it because they just want to shit all over the guy because, yes, he's said some stupid things, but I do think you gotta take everything he says, even on social media right now, everything that he says with a grain of salt and just assume that much of it is going to be in character. Somebody made the comment recently, and I agree with this, and I don't know if this is something that is in the plans, but somebody suggested that they bring in Samantha Irvin to be with him, to be his manager, right? She always wanted to be part of the show. That's why she left WWE. She wanted to actually be a manager. She wanted to perform. She didn't want to just ring announce. And I do think that the two of them together and him kind of going around gloating about, hey, look what I got, you know, you can't have this, could get him even more heat. I do think the risk you run in that situation is that she may end up overshadowing him. And it could be one of those, you know, Mark Mero Sable type situations. So you got to be careful there. Again, I have no idea if she has any interest in coming in and doing anything, but even her, you look at her on social media sometimes. When people say shit about her, they say shit about Ricochet, she'll respond to it. You know, she's not above responding to it. She'll post pictures of her giving the fans crotch chops and stuff. So that could be another way to get him even more heat if they wanted to go down that route. But we have the four-way match here, and they all get their entrances. Bell sounds, and immediately, Hangman and Switchblade, they start bickering with each other. Moxley just rolls out of the ring. He's like, all right, you know what? I'm going to let you guys argue amongst yourselves. And he rolls out to the floor. Cassidy, though, takes him out with a dive. So that's how we started. All three take turns, though. They finally get on the same page, briefly. And they all begin to take turns putting the boots to Moxley up against the barricade until Claudio and Wheeler Yuta, they show up and they bail Moxley out. So they brawl with Hangman and Jay White. Marina Shafir, she attacks Orange Cassidy. They're all brawling in the crowd now. Cassidy ends up back at ringside, and Moxley's coming at him, and he stops him. He goes, wait, wait, wait. And he puts his hands in his pockets, right? But just long enough for Hangman and Switchblade to grab Moxley from behind. And all three of them give Moxley a shield triple powerbomb through the announce desk. Very appropriate. So the truce then is over at that point, with Moxley wiped out on the floor. Page attacks Cassidy and White, and we basically end up with a triple threat here. They also cut to a suite, and up in, they weren't in a box, but they were up in one of the suite areas, is Christian Cage in the Patriarchy. And Christian is, he's stroking, well, let me specify here. He's stroking the contract case that has his contract for a guaranteed world. Hey, what happens up in that suite should stay in that suite. But he's sitting there with Mother Wayne and Kip Wayne and Nick Wayne and all the Waynes. But then they show Hook is in an adjacent suite area looking over like Batman lording over Gotham. He's keeping an eye on Christian. So if Christian tries to cash in or he's going to make some kind of a move, I guess Hook is right there. He's going to cut them off. So anyway, the three challengers are fighting in the ring. Moxley is staying down at ringside. Jay White clotheslines Hangman to the floor. And he was the last man in the ring. When Moxley returns, he hits him from behind. Cassidy comes in. He attacks Moxley. Moxley, who now is bleeding from the back of the head, puts Cassidy down with a cutter. That's the first time I've seen Jon Moxley bleed since he went heel. And it was hard way. It's the one thing that Moxley used to do in every fucking match, and ever since he went heel, he doesn't do it anymore. We have blood on this show from MJF and from Adam Cole and from fucking Will Ospreay. I think somebody else may have bled. If Moxley bleeds now, it's like by accident. It's like he finally got over his vice. All it took was a heel turn. Page returned to the ring. He went nose-to-nose with Moxley, and they traded elbows. Jay White returned. He rolled up Moxley for a two count. Moxley avoided a Blade Runner, and Cassidy put Moxley down with a DDT. All four men are down. Page hit White with a buckshot lariat. Moxley went after Hangman, who put him down with a Deadeye. Page set up for a buckshot. Wheeler Yuta shows up at ringside, and he grabs his leg. And Page kicks him away. Moxley gets a chair, and he's walking towards Hangman, who hits him with a buckshot. Page had Moxley beat, but the referee was down at ringside. The referee returned, but Cassidy rolled Page into a pin for a two count. White hit Moxley with a Blade Runner, and he had him beat. But Yuta hit the referee to break up the count and knocked him out of the ring. White now is staring down Yuta. Yuta's on the floor outside, and White is staring him down and does not see that coming up from behind is Marina Shafir, and he turns around and he drops Marina Shafir with a Blade Runner and gets a big pop from the crowd because she's been getting involved in everybody's business. And so finally, she got what she had coming to her, and somebody put her down. So everybody popped. Yuta hit White with a Busaiku knee. Moxley followed with a Death Rider on Jay White, and he covered him. Claudio shoved Bryce Remsburg back into the ring, and the referee made the slow three count. Moxley retains the AEW World Championship. A very lame, if not unpredictable, or unpredictable, a very lame, if not predictable finish. Very predictable. And equally as lame. Not the first time we've seen Wheeler Yuta, by the way, involved in a fucking finish on a pay-per-view. I mean, I can think of few things more lame than that. The fuck is he even doing out there in these situations? Like, what are we doing here? This is the main event of your pay-per-view. So after the match, Death Riders are standing over Jay White, and they were about to take him out with a chair when we hear FTR's music. And out they come. They stop on the stage. The lights go out. And we get a rated FTR logo up on the big screen. Everybody pops. And Adam Copeland's music hits. And out he comes, his first time back on TV since he broke his leg. So that happened in May. It's almost January, so he's been out for a while. He joins Dax and Cash as FTR fight off Claudio with a dive. They fought off Yuta with a shatter machine. Copeland and Moxley, they are left face to face until John Moxley takes the first swing. Copeland ducks and hits a spear. Christian Cage is watching all of this unfold from up in the suite, and he is very upset by this. Of all people, fucking Copeland is coming out to interrupt the festivities here. He is ruining his opportunity to potentially cash in tonight. We should have a competition going for who's going to cash in first. Tiffany Stratton or Christian Cage? We should take bets. So Copeland breaks off the bottom part of the chair that was in the ring, that bottom bar. We've seen him do this before. And he applies a crossface to Moxley with the bar across his mouth. Claudio pulls Moxley out of the ring to safety. Copeland takes the microphone and he begins to speak. And we can't hear what he's saying because the microphone doesn't work. So then he realizes this and he thinks it's fixed and he goes to talk again. And again, it still doesn't work. So finally, the microphone actually does begin working. And he tells Moxley, first of all, he called Moxley kid. And he goes, yeah, I called you kid because when you were growing pubes, I was first starting out in the business, which I didn't need to know that. But then he says, you're all mine. Rated FTR, we are taking it all. Whatever that means. The AEW World title, they don't have the tag team title. So what are they taking? Trios? Oh, yes. Okay. There you go. I completely forgot that they have the Trios titles. those titles are so insignificant and rarely defended. I completely forgot they have the Trios titles. You could do Copeland and FTR against Claudio, Pac, and Yuta for the Trios titles. Except for the fact that they've already announced the Trios match for Dynamite on Wednesday, and it's going to be Moxley, Claudio, and Yuta taking on Copeland and FTR. So that will not be for the Trios titles. But yes, Tony Schiavone, he had just gotten word from Tony Khan in his ear that Trios match was made official for Wednesday night. As pay-per-view main events go, this was one of their weakest of the entire year. I didn't know how this match was going to stack up to their best four-way, which is the Four Pillars match from Double or Nothing last year. This match couldn't hold a candle to that match. I mean, the difference between the two matches is just night and day doesn't even feel like an appropriate way to compare the two. The finish was lame. I figured we were going to get a lame finish anyway because Moxley wasn't going to lose. Again, it's another one of those matches on the card where it just feels like the outcome is preordained. You already know going into it, this person's not going to lose. You know, there's going to be some fuckery from the Death Riders. And that's exactly what we got. But the match itself, I just thought was overall very disappointing. And so now you have FTR and Copeland, who I figured was coming back, you know, in Asheville on Wednesday. And they brought him back tonight instead. And he'll be there on Dynamite this week. And it's great that we have a bigger name who's, you know, making Jon Moxley a target. But, you know, Copeland and Moxley is not something that gets me terribly excited. So, do they do that match at Revolution? Do they do that match on television between now and Revolution so we can get Darby and Moxley at Revolution? I don't know what the timeline is going to be. I'm going to still assume that we are going to get Darby and Moxley at Revolution. And that if we do get a singles match between Copeland and Moxley, I could see them building that up as a big Dynamite main event. Maybe on some kind of a themed episode of the show. Oh, you know what? We have Grand Slam. I completely forgot about Grand Slam. Okay, so there you go. You do it in Australia. You do Copeland and Moxley for the championship on February 15th. You come back at the beginning of March. You do Darby and Moxley. There you go. I forgot. They're going to have a... I don't even know if it is a pay-per-view, though. I think it might be a Max special. However they're classifying it, they're going to have a major show in February now, so... Okay, so that makes sense, then. You could do the match on that show. But, like, Hangman Page, like, one of my questions and concerns as we head into the beginning of this new year, what's the direction for his character? His character is fueled by winning back the championship. But it just feels like he's being brushed aside now because we're moving on to Copeland and FTR. And so where does Hangman fit into all this? So that'll be one of the things I watch for on Dynamite this coming Wednesday. Is he on the show? And if so, does it seem like we have a direction for where he's headed? That's one of the questions that I have going into Dynamite this week. On the whole, there were things on this show that left me disappointed, like the main event. But I thought the Continental Classic final was excellent. I thought the semifinal match with Ospreay and Fletcher was excellent. I thought the match with Ricochet and Okada was very good. I enjoyed it. I'm not going to tell you that it was as good as the other two matches because it wasn't. But I enjoyed it. Mercedes and Statlander, rough in the first half, but it picked up and it got very good. Not as good as their first match, but I thought that this was a very good match. Takeshita and Hobbs turned into a hell of a match. So there was enough on this show, and it wasn't as bloated of a card as some of these pay-per-views tend to be, where overall it was a good show. It was a good show, but that main event will not rank among the best ones that they have had all year. And even though we got some great matches in the Continental Classic, I'm happy it's over. Now we head into the new year. Let's see who they get back from injury. Let's see now where these stories are going to go as we progress towards Grand Slam and as we progress towards Revolution. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with Swerve and Ricochet. I want to see how they continue to evolve the Toni Storm character as she makes her way inevitably towards Mariah May. Jamie Hayter is another person on the roster. As we head into the new year, they should be really starting to build her up so that by the time we get to a Double or Nothing, by the time we get to Texas, she should be competing for the Women's World Championship. Or do they want her to beat Mercedes and win the TBS title? I mean, we kind of feel like a step down for her, though, because she was the world champion previously. But maybe that's the direction. Maybe they want to build up Hayter for Mercedes. But there are certain people that I have on the brain that are on that roster that I will have an eye on. And Fletcher is another one, and you can pick out certain people. What is Tony Khan going to do with them as we head into 2025? Where is MJF going to go from here? Better not be back to Adam Cole. I could tell you that. Where's he going to go? I don't know where the pieces are going to fall, but they have some big names back, like MJF and Kenny soon enough, Kenny and then Copeland. So Tony Khan has a bunch of names coming back. Let's see what he does with them. This Death Rider stuff, though, is still complete death for me. This story just doesn't work for me. I want them to spice it up. I want it to work. I want them to do something to get me invested in this. But what they've done so far, as far as the Death Riders, has just been a complete fail. I'm sorry to say. What did you think of World's End for 2024? 54% thumbs up, and even 54%. And an even 46% thumbs down. So running positive on the whole. Not overwhelmingly positive, but it is positive over negative. So at Solomonster on X is where you can go vote. Thank you guys for all the support so far. I'm going to get into your messages now. So if you have any super chats and comments about the pay-per-view you want to get in, get them in now. We are approaching 2 a.m. and I have a podcast I got to work on tomorrow. So we got a lot of work left to do. So let's get through this here. Hey, Dallas Caballero, one of our channel members. Thank you, Dallas. I see you, brother. Oh, I got it. Oh, you know what? You know what? Before I even get into your super chats, I did mention. Oh, we hit the goal. Thank you, by the way. We'll do Be the Booker in a little bit, too. Somebody asked me a question the other day, and I mentioned that I got myself a little Christmas gift. I treated myself for the holidays. I came across something that piqued my interest. It caught my eye. I didn't think it was actually going to come until next week. So I was very surprised and very happy when I got alerted that a package had arrived for me earlier today. And so I will share with you now some photos of my gift, my holiday gift to myself. I give you the white winged eagle. This now belongs to me. I will tell you, this thing is a unit. This thing is absolutely, it's the biggest belt I've ever owned, and it weighs almost as much as I do. It is something else. But I love this fucking thing. This thing is incredible. I took just a bunch of photos of it. It's just a gorgeous belt. Because, you know, the Winged Eagle has been back in the news of late. So, of course, I got the Winged Eagle on the brain. Never owned a belt on a white strap, but it's like butter smooth, hand-tooled white leather. It's just a gorgeous belt. It really is. Here it is. This is me earlier holding it up. I couldn't snap it in, but this is me holding it up around my waist. And see, this is the belt that Cody should have had. This right here. Yeah, it was Cody who brought back the white Intercontinental title many years ago. Now imagine him with this. See, this is the belt. Kevin Owens wishes that he was running around with this belt. This looks a hell of a lot better than the one that Kevin Owens is running around with. I can tell you that. But yeah, this thing is incredible. So I just wanted to share that with you. Funny enough, I was able to find it with the original block letter WWF logo too. But yeah, this thing is amazing. I have it folded up over here. I'm not lying when I tell you this thing is so heavy. That's why it can't hang on the wall behind me. It'll rip right out of the wall. But yeah, no, this is not being defended. Let me see here if I could show it to you without destroying it here. Didn't Warrior have the white? Yeah, he did. Yes, actually, he did. The Warrior. Oh my God. The Warrior did have the white winged eagle. Here you go. It's right here. Look at that. Oh my God. This thing is unbelievable. So I saw it. I said, man, I'm having a difficult time here. But what's great about it, again, it's like real leather, heavy plates, and it just, you can see, it just comes right off the plate. It's the way it's supposed to be. It's just a gorgeous piece of hardware. So anyway, the white winged eagle, there it is, ladies and gentlemen. You're looking at the proud owner. Very excited. Now I got to figure out how I'm going to store this thing. I have no idea how I'm going to store this. I got to get a bag. I don't know. A display case. I don't know. One of those little stands, maybe. It's on that table there. Oh, my God. Anyway, I wanted to share that with all of you. It puts everything else to shame. So. I should cut a promo with it? Well, maybe. Well, we'll see. Maybe after. Is that real or a replica? Brother, this is as real as it gets right here. Technically, it's a replica, but I honestly think this is bigger than the real, like the real one that they used to carry around. So, this thing is, it's a fucking unit, this thing. All right, let me go back here to your earlier super chats. Start from the beginning. Josiah Ball says, I finally got Ospreay versus Okada. Yes, you did. Aren't you happy? That was the highlight of the show. The Moldy Cheeseburger says, I heard nothing but great things about this Tony Storm rookie. Did you know that she dominated Stardom? A future women's champion is Tony Storm. Mariah who? Yeah, I think this Tony Storm is going places. I think she's going to do okay. Oz and Glorious, we haven't seen the World or Trios belts for months, but we sure as fuck get to see Wheeler Yuta and his incredibly punchable face in every main event. Yeah, too many main events. Jerome Eugenio, a very good pay-per-view to end the year. Bobbert Reviews with the 27. Hope you're having a nice Hanukkah, Sala Monster. It's a great holiday week. We had Christmas. We're in the middle of Hanukkah. It's all very festive. Now we have New Year's coming up. We get to ring in the New Year together on Tuesday night. I might even drink some heading into our New Year's celebration on Tuesday. It's going to be a good time. Thank you, Bobbert. Joe B. Are kickouts at one starting to become overdone? I feel like they're happening every week now. Yes, they are. I agree. They are becoming overdone for sure. Mr. E1976, here's to the tip jar. Thanks for everything you do, Sala Monsters. Stay pressing forward. Thank you, sir. Appreciate that very much. Dallas, with 37 months of channel membership, says, isn't it ironic? Oh, wait, hold on a second. We have a... We do have a goal in the chat. We only got about a minute and 15 seconds left. We are at 7 out of 10. So if we hit that goal, we'll do a bonus Be the Booker. But we only got about a minute left. So I don't know if we're going to hit that one. But yes, thank you for pointing that out. I just noticed the countdown timer. Dallas says, 37 months of channel membership. Isn't it ironic that the big title challengers in 2025 are Edge, Cena, and Rock? So much for new stars. Wrestling will never move on. Yeah, you know what? I guess that, CM Punk, throw him in there too. You know, he'll be wrestling for a championship. You're not wrong. You're definitely not wrong. Joe B, again, thank you. I read yours, and Mr. E, and there's Oz and Glorious. Oz and Glorious says, we went from Lucha Bros, Young Bucks, FTR, Tag Division to Worthless Private Party and a bunch of broccoli-haired claw clones battling for belts. Well, look, I mean, Private Party, that was a great match on Dynamite, 5 years in the making. They won the belts. Can't blame them. Where's the competition? Why aren't they being booked for Dynamite? It's not their fault. What are you blaming them for? You don't think they wouldn't love to be on Dynamite, defending their belts every week? Mr. Rod, thank you for the $20. Which, in your opinion, has been the worst storyline in AEW this year? The Elite, the Death Riders, or both? I've at least been entertained by Okada, so I say the Death Riders. They get my vote. Be calm, see clearly. I love Moxley, but it's time to lose the title. Well, I hate to disappoint you, but he's not losing it for at least a few more months. We haven't even seen the fucking belt since he won it. We have not seen the championship since he won it. Uncle Donk, with the $35 super chat, do you think MJF would play a better role as the one who saves AEW from Moxley? I think MJF makes more sense than Copeland. MJF is one of the AEW pillars. He's done with Adam Cole finally. After all, the man's got an AEW tattoo, for fuck's sake. What are your thoughts? Oh, it's going to be hard because he just went heel again a few months ago, but yes, that would make a lot more sense than Adam Copeland would. Adam Copeland was a WWE lifer. He's a 50-year-old WWE lifer who is now going to stand up for AEW at a time when you have people like MJF and you have Will Ospreay and you have Darby Allin and you have a lot of different people who were originals or who would be a much more sensible pick for a spot like that. So I don't disagree with you on that, but MJF is a heel and I don't see him not being a heel, so it's not going to happen, but he would make more sense. He could actually be the kind of unwilling, like he doesn't want to stand up for AEW, but like the fans, they almost will him into it and people come up to him and say, hey, you know, you got to stand up. We need your help, man. And he goes around and he just says, fuck off. He doesn't want to have anything to do with it. Like, there's a longer term story here that you could build out where eventually MJF becomes the savior of the company. You could do that. And I think that could work. But I think they want to put it on Darby. And then you got Christian, who's probably going to cash in his contract. Boots, AEW wasting tequila and toilet paper. Yeah. You know what? You're right. Those are commodities right there. Uffman says, with a tear in my eye, I gotta see Thunder Rosa in booty shorts. You won't hear me complaining. Not one bit. Easy there, big fella. That's Danny Trejo you're talking about here. Are you telling me that you want to see Danny Trejo in booty shorts? Is that what you're saying to me? Eminem with $25 super chat. This pay-per-view would have been a 3-hour Dynamite episode. Nonetheless, based on the recap, it was not a bad pay-per-view. Okada Ospreay was the best match of the night, although Monet and Statlander is close. Is Cardona WWE bound next year? I think he is. Nothing I've heard. I could tell you he's hog bound. He's coming into hog. We'll have him in Chicago in a few weeks. I believe he's wrestling Zilla on that show. But my gut tells me, yes, I think he will be. Alex with the 25. Brother Solo, I wanted to wish you and everybody here an amazing new year. In your predictions, you mentioned Samoa Joe returning to WWE. If it happens, will it be closer to the end of the year or somewhere in the middle? I have no idea. I don't know. I don't know his contract status. If I had to venture a prediction, I would say probably not until at least summertime. Trill Mexican. Just left Orlando for World's End. I'm not sure how it was on TV, but that show was fun in person. Now I'm making this 3.5-hour drive back to Miami listening to Solomonster. Well, I gave you a 3-hour show last night because we took phone calls. So we had a 3-hour SmackDown stream last night. It was fun. So if you didn't listen to it on your way to Orlando, you can listen to it on the way back. But he's probably listening live to this review right now. Shout out to Trill Mexican. Eminem says, maybe The Rock should have made an appearance at World's End. As much as I like Moxley being the AEW World Champion, it's time to take that title off of him. Hell, Tiffany Stratton can come to AEW and cash in on Mox. She may as well at this point. Prince Vegeta, buy, sell, rent, and throw in the trash these underwhelming heel factions. The Nexus, the Death Riders, the Alliance, and the Aces and Eights. I'm going to buy on the Nexus because that was fun until they killed it. I'll rent on the Alliance. I mean, I hated the whole invasion storyline, but I'll rent on the Alliance. I'm going to sell on the Aces and Eights, and I'm going to throw the Death Riders in the fucking trash. That's what I'm going to do. At least the Aces and Eights had cool entrance music. Recon Sun, 37 months of channel membership. So glad I chose this over the holiday tour. Lost my voice twice because of Kenny and Copeland. 6 shows in 1 year. Let's see if I can beat it next year. That's very cool. You're going to have to try to break your own record. Phil Dog, celebrating 24 months of membership. Hey, Phil Dog, congrats, man. You got some time before you catch up to Recon Sun, but thank you, brother. Jake Jones with the $50 drop. Brother Solo, been busy as hell lately with seeing family for the holidays, but I've been catching every stream. Thank God for Will Ospreay. Both of his matches over-delivered. I also have the light blue winged eagle, and it is beautiful. Take care, my man. Yeah, I didn't think I would necessarily like the white as much as I do the black belt, but they both pop really well, and it's a gorgeous belt. It really is. Powder blue. That was another one that the Ultimate Warrior had, right? This one has 10 saddle backing. Beautiful. Eminem says, we want double B the Booker. Solo versus Goldberg rematch. Not happening. Why would you wish that upon me? Why would you wish me more harm than I was already dealt last week? Uffman says, get yourself a display case. I got a 5-shelf display case for my 10 replica belt. You got 10 replica belts? I'll bet you don't have one as nice as this one, though. Sitting in my living room, I added white lights to it, and the belts shine beautifully. That sounds amazing, actually. If I had room for it, I would do it, but I don't. One day when I'm finally out of here, I got plans. I got all kinds of ideas floating in my head, but I just can't do it. And Heber Hero, I love you solo since back in the TV Tracks days. Well, thank you, Heber Hero. Thank you for sticking with me. That's a long time. That's at least 10 years. Thank you, brother. Turtlehead says, bet all of his belts are plastic. Oh, boy. Talk about famous phone calls. Plastic, man. That belt is plastic. Oh, Robert, you got black suede backing. That's pretty cool. Ugh. Who needs weights? All I got to do is lift this. You can kind of see. You can see the tan backing covering all the bolts. But, yeah, this thing is amazing, man. Now tell me that this is not something that Cody should be walking around with, okay? Come on. I know it's not a giant logo, but come on. This is what a championship should look like. Come on. You'll never convince me otherwise. Ugh, good grief. Uffman. With the fight. See, I wanted to treat myself. I saw it. I said, I can't resist. It says, I have a really nice WWF winged eagle in my collection. Black leather and WWF blocked logos on it. It is a beauty and heavy. Yeah, but is it 12 pounds heavy? That's how much this thing weighs. Believe it or not. 6 millimeter thick plates, 12 pounds. 52 inches long. All right, let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
I think things turned out okay for Cody Rhodes. Fire Panda says, Bliss Fan paid $6,000 for that belt. Bliss Fan, is that true? Bliss Fan, did you pay $6,000 for the Fiend belt? I hope not. All right. He says he wasn't. Good. Good. There we go. We begin here with the Killer Bees, Jumpin' Jim Brunzel, and his name just popped out of my head. Be Brian Blair. Jim Brunzel and Brian Blair, the Killer Bees. Never tag team champions in WWE, but they were a solid team. Killer Bees against the Von Erichs. Kerry and Kevin Von Erich. That's a great 1980s wrestling match right there. There you go. The Von Erichs and the Bees. I hate bees, so I'll be rooting for the Von Erichs. Women's Be the Booker. We begin with the TNA, former TNA, Knockouts champion, Mickey James. We just selected Mickey James 24 hours ago when we did Be the Booker on the SmackDown stream. So we have landed on Mickey 2 nights in a row. Interesting. Who did she wrestle last night? I don't even remember who the opponent was. Well, let's find out. Hardcore Country. going to be taking on Sol Ruka. Sol Ruka, a star in the making. I know Sol Ruka is a favorite of a lot of people in NXT. Sol Ruka and Mickey James. Right, we're liking these matches so far, but now we got to pick a main event. Oh, it was Raquel. That's right. It was Mickey and Raquel last night. Tonight it was Sol Ruka. Men's Be the Booker, we have, my God, is he pale. Sheamus. I was literally almost blinded by this image when it came up. Sheamus. In the main event here of Be the Booker. And he will be taking on... Liv Morgan gives you her room key. Now pick a stipulation. Don't mind if I do. I'll take that room key right there. Thank you very much. All right, we got to pick a stip before we pick an opponent. Sheamus is going to have to stand by. Let's find out what kind of a match Sheamus is going to have. He is fluorescent, isn't he? I almost had to look away when that image came up. He's like translucent. All right, we're going to have ourselves, oh no, an exploding barbed wire death match. You know, Sheamus is 45 years old. He shouldn't be in an exploding barbed wire death match. He's 45. Actually, he might be older than that. He might be 46, but it's spinal stenosis. He doesn't need to be in an exploding barbed wire death match. Let's pick an opponent for him. No, wait, this is the women. No, we're definitely not picking a woman. Sheamus, he works a little stiff. We don't want to do that. Mark Briscoe. All right, Mark Briscoe against Sheamus in an exploding barbed wire death match. Onita had one at 65 and Dory Funk Jr. at 80. Fuck Onita. Fucking guy broke Bobby Heenan's neck. Fuck him. Anyway, we got a clean sweep tonight, guys. Bust out those brooms. We got ourselves a clean sweep. It's the way that it should always be. Uffman says, sitting here with my winged eagle on my shoulder for the rest of the review. Well, aren't you special? That would be brutal. That would be a brutal match. The only time Mark Briscoe can main event. Yeah, they're like two brawlers, man. They would just beat the hell out of each other. That'd be fun, actually. Mark Briscoe and Sheamus? You mean to tell me you wouldn't want to see that match? No, it was not Ken Patera who broke Bobby Heenan's neck. It was Onita. He was very sloppy. And he broke Bobby's neck. That was in Japan. It was in 83. Never got his neck fixed for many, many years because he had no insurance. So think about that. He worked AWA and then he went to WWF. And all the years he was in WWF, never got his neck fixed because he wasn't, I don't even know how he wasn't an employee. Obviously, he was talent, but he worked behind the scenes for them, too. I mean, he was responsible for producing a lot of promos backstage. How did he not have insurance for all those years? That's insane to me. It's one of the reasons why he left for WCW. Once he went to WCW, within a few years of working there, he had the insurance and he had his neck operated on. But I forgot what discs were ruptured or what the issue was exactly, but he went probably a good, 12 or 13 years, 14 years before he had surgery to finally get it fixed. It's crazy. We've got George freaking Sekman. WWE just opposed Christian's trademark for Captain Charisma. Watch them use it for R-Truth or Chad Gable. No, they're not going to use it. They'll just prevent him from using it. Oz and Gloria says, at Sushi Onita is better than the garbage U.S. healthcare system. Well, that is undoubtedly true. You get no argument from me there. Warrior didn't help Bobby's neck either. Yeah, right. Tell me about it. He was very vocal about that too. Working all those weasel suit matches with the Ultimate Warrior and taking bumps from him didn't do his neck any favors. It's like Punk when he complained about Ryback. Working with Ryback and Ryback press slamming him through the table. Didn't do too well for Punk's health either. Hey, Austin, congrats. He's going to the Royal Rumble. He got tickets as a Christmas gift. That's awesome. You're going to get to see a ladder match. Cody Rhodes and Kevin Owens. Hey, Richie, thank you for the five. Michael Myers versus the kid from Home Alone. Who would win? Michael would basically pin him up to the wall with his knife like a portrait and let him hang and bleed out. I'm going Michael Myers. You think a couple of cans of paint and some Legos are going to stop him? Really? Anyway, thank you guys. Now it's late, 2:30 in the morning. Now you know why I didn't review the last couple of AEW pay-per-views. They ended even later. But thank you for hanging out with me. This was the final pay-per-view review for 2024. The next time I'm live will be Monday night. We have Raw. And then live on Tuesday night here on the channel, probably around 10 p.m. or so. We're going to be ringing in the new year. Make it till midnight. Celebrating New Year's Eve. And then live on Wednesday, because we have Dynamite, the first episode being simulcast on Max. So we'll be streaming three nights in a row, skip Thursday, and then streaming on Friday for SmackDown. The first three-hour SmackDown, by the way. Oh, joy. Be calm, see clearly. Thank God AEW is on Max now. I've got Max. You don't have TBS? I don't really see what the big deal is. If you got TBS, who gives a shit about Max? Probably going to get the same commercials either way. Whatever. Hey, look, if it's going to provide more people with access to the show, then that's not a bad thing. But yeah, keep an eye out. Later today, episode 894 of the podcast will be up. I'm going to bed late. I got a lot of work to do, so I don't know when the show will get done. I would not watch for it until later in the afternoon. Possibly closer to dinner time. It's probably going to be a late drop, but keep your eye out for episode 894, and then I will see you back here live for the final, pains me to say this, but the final two-hour Raw on Monday night. Until then, take care, guys.